The truth is, we all become addicted to the things that make us feel good, make us feel superior, make us feel stronger and better, and I'm no exception. I love stimuli that helps me to find solutions, and I've always been that way. I'm wired for it now. I developed it early in life as my access point to the universe. Some people feel that way with substances, and so they consume them. Probably everybody feels that way about certain foods. They simply give them a point of reference that makes them feel important. And that leads to everything else. So, finding solutions, understanding the things that make the world in the trouble that it's in, is what I do. Unfortunately, it also gives me a vantage point on the world that isn't always entirely positive. But it's what I do. And it is something I'm very, very good at. So my goal with what I teach here and in my live classes and books is to answer those questions, to solve those problems that we're all dealing with in the world we live in. And the only thing holding me back from a lot more solutions is more resources to work on them. But here, I'm going to give you a leg up. I'm going to answer for you questions that you need answered, that are going to help you to solve your own health concerns, that are going to help you to think about it in a way that leads to success. And so this is the beginning of a series of conversations about our idyllic health, how we obtain it, what we need to change from our normal pattern or typical pattern of the way we live to a better pattern, healthier pattern. So the first principle I want to talk about is movement. We need, and I've said this a number of times in different ways, in different places, but it bears repeating because it's so important. We need movement. We never want anything to become stagnant or static. In Chinese medicine, for thousands of years, there's been a focus on targeting stuck energy and getting it to move. You can do this with exercise, which is my preference in Chinese medicine. I'm a dabbler in Chinese medicine. I know a lot about it. But when it comes to knowing it, I know Qigong, which are exercises you can do for yourself or to someone else to bring about healing. And what you must do is generate movement in a healthy way. A healthy flow of energy, a flow of movement in the body is like a calm river. It's flowing. It's flowing fast enough to stay clean, but not super clean. You want it to be able to pick up impurities and carry them out of the body. So we're not talking about rapids. We're talking about a slow but consistently moving river that is calm and peaceful. A young kid who can barely swim can get in it on a kayak and feel safe. They can swim across it and feel safe. It's definitely going to move them, but it's not turbulent. And that describes how energy should be moving through the body. Generally speaking, when we go toward an addiction of any kind, right, a thought addiction, a pattern addiction, habits, movies, substances, foods, behaviors, whatever it is, we really are trying to anchor in our bodies a certain sensation. Unfortunately, that anchored sensation represents illness. And if we want it to not represent illness, we've got to let go of the anchor. We've got to allow energy to continue to move. It's born of fear. It's born of feeling inferior, feeling hurt, feeling damaged. People get to where they feel like maybe they just can't be normal or be special or be important in their own right without this. And so they seek it all the time. And what they really do or what they are doing is they're continually locking down that pattern. And we find that this is better, it's less of a problem in people who get out and exercise, do rock climbing, hiking, camping, skiing, those kinds of things. It helps them to keep the energy moving. But we don't find that it's adequate in the modern world. There are too many things in the modern world where you have to stop and then think. And thinking is a good thing. But if you're constantly stopping and then thinking, you're going to develop a pattern that leads to disease. You do not ever see disease. Think of disease as a stagnant, brackish pond overgrown with moss, mosquito larva, right? Not that we don't want mosquitoes to live and be happy too, but think of illness as that pond. Anything could happen there, right? And anything that does happen there is going to tend to stay there, or at least leave its mark. We're not going to see that pond clean out, you know, the illness that came through, the mosquitoes that were carrying a disease, for example. We're not going to clean out toxic water that happened to run in there from a toxic spill or contamination upstream, whether man-made or natural. It's not going to clean itself out. Eventually, maybe, there will be a little bit of run through, but it's not enough. The energy's stuck right there, and so it can become sick and stay sick. You do not see any illness ever anywhere where the energy continues to move. Now, I have a theory that every person who resists the kind of change that will actually lead to healing, and I see this all the time, people who would much rather go get drugs which aren't going to heal them and which are going to damage or in some cases ruin their quality of life, and they want to live on those drugs rather than making choices to get well. They do it because they actually don't want to disrupt what they're holding in their bodies. They feel uncomfortable. They feel like some part of them is threatened. And they may not have this consciously nailed down. It may be a very sort of subconscious awareness that, hey, this is a threat to things I hold dear. Therefore, I don't really feel good about taking that route. I just talked to a lady recently, and I hope if she listens to this at some point in the future, she's not hurt by me stating this, because it's really intended as an observation for everyone's benefit, including hers. She needed to do a certain type of cleanse, and I'm not going to tell you any details, but she needed to do a certain type of cleanse in order to get well from something that she probably could get well from in a week or two. This is very easy stuff. But every time she approached the aggressive cleanse, she said no. Every time. And so what does that mean? What it means is she's going to continue to stay sick rather than get well because she can't let go of what she's anchored to. So what's the point from this? What conclusion should we draw from it for ourselves? Hopefully you've already drawn it. But the conclusion we need to draw is that above all else, we need to create movement. We need to become in love with the idea of creating a healthy movement. Now, it's possible to have movement that's too fast. It's possible for the water to be turbulent. And we wouldn't want that either, so I'm going to talk about that too. But more than anything else, we need to be willing to recognize if we're resisting change, if we're resisting movement, that we need to make a change. We need to be motivated to make that change to a different way of thinking, to a way of appreciating that movement. Otherwise, we're going to end up holding on to the very things that make us sick at all costs. I mean, I've seen people stuck in a situation that was perpetuating their cancer. You know, I've had some cancer patients I've worked with who've gotten better, and I've got some that have died. Okay? And I've been observing very closely, because one of the things I'm really good at is observing nature in action in the human being. Actually, I'm pretty good at observing nature in general in terms of healing, movement, healthy activity versus sick activity. I have a natural tendency to understand that. So I've observed this phenomenon taking place where some cancer patients live and some die. And there are some things I can point out about the cancer patients that live and some things about the cancer patients that die, but we'll talk about that more in some cancer lecture later. This isn't about that. This is about a general movement toward health as well as a specific movement toward health, because we need this specifically sometimes. But the cancer patients who have died, I have observed they all had something in their life that was holding them down right there. And that they, you know, of all the cancer patients I've seen, every single one of them, every one of them, that's 100% success rate, have shrunk their tumors in the first 3 weeks using my natural, I'm not using like alternative chemo or anything. I mean, this is just natural healing. This is just creating movement, disinfecting the body, putting some life and vitality in there. Every single one of them has had the tumor shrink in the first 3 weeks. Some of them, it shrunk and disappeared, was gone. They're completely healed. Some of them, that stopped happening and it started to come back. And in those cases, I was close enough associated with, I could watch what was happening in their life and see how they were arriving at that outcome. I could see what they were holding on to. And the bottom line was they couldn't move on. They couldn't move on because what they were clinging to was so important to them. Now, it's looked different in each of those cases. What they were holding to was different in each of those cases. But often, it surrounded something with a lot of pain involved with it. A lot of pain. And they felt like they couldn't let go of their anger, or they couldn't let go of the pain, or they couldn't let go of their guilt, but it was associated with a situation with a lot of loss and a lot of pain. And that's a sad situation to see, because there comes a point where you know this person's going to die. And I usually know it pretty soon. In fact, I can predict it pretty well by the opening discussion. They will say things that make me know they're holding on to stuff. And sometimes they're open to discuss that, and sometimes they're not. But the problem is, if it's a deep-rooted pain, it can take some time. It can take some time to get over that. What's in common with all of this discussion? They were holding on and not letting go. They had a stagnant pool. Now, we also see, as I said, the water moving too fast sometimes. This happens. Sometimes the water is rapids and turbulence and it's tearing away at the embankment and it's dangerous for anyone who gets in it. It's not a peaceful, pleasant, healthy experience. It's not filthy. It's not going to lead to cancer. Well, it might lead to cancer eventually, but it's not going to directly cause or create conditions of cancer. What it's going to create are conditions of malnutrition. And the interesting thing about the modern world is we see both. We see both in the same person. This need to hold on to and cling to stuff, and then this need to move faster than fast. Do more than more to get everything done, to get ahead in the world, to become better than everybody else. It's this imbalance where people are not at peace with what is. Now, This is a delicate territory, right? Because part of solving the world's problems for a person like myself is going out and working hard to find solutions that everybody else is missing. Or if they haven't missed it, to find out what they are so I can use them too. In any event, it's a lot of work. Try going through a doctoral program. I can promise you that's a lot of work. And at the same time, you've got to anchor yourself to get through. The irony is that becoming a doctor makes you sicker for life. For life. You're more likely to die earlier if you become a doctor in the modern world. We're not going to see too many more, I don't think, of those 100-plus-year-old doctors. Because in the modern world, the conditions are too extreme, too divergent. Now, we have some people who have handled it better than others. me going through the doctoral program, I certainly didn't handle it perfectly. I didn't even handle it good. I had a lot of things added to my plate. So I guess I can use that as a pitiful excuse, but the bottom line is, it's an irony. It's an icon of irony. Push, 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 but at the same time, anchor your life. Don't let anything move. Lock yourself in to this pattern that will allow you to maintain some sanity while going through this horrible, intensive program, right? For a good cause. For a good cause. And so this is our challenge today, is how do we get that balance in place? As herbalists, we have some advantages. We have some old traditional medicine approaches that are very well understood. They're not going to help with malnutrition. If you've listened to many of my courses, one of the things I talk about is herbalists don't understand how to deal with malnutrition in the modern world. And the people who do understand how to deal with malnutrition in the modern world don't understand herbal medicine. And so we end up with two failures working parallel in the alternative medicine world, not solving the problems. They're just kind of managing them. And we come up with new, stronger tools. Like in my practice, I'm about to introduce some electromagnetic frequency technology, as well as ozone injections and ozonation of blood. They're things I believe in. I think they're great tools. But the bottom line is, those are stronger and stronger tools to compensate for an underlying problem where we have reached a tipping point in malnutrition. And we also don't really have very many people who understand how to get the body to operate correctly. But let me go back to herbs for a second. One of the beautiful things about herbs is, if you understand them, you can definitely use them for a variety of properties that they contain. One of them being to sedate or stabilize. One is to stimulate. One is to tonify if it lacks tone. So we can take the body, get an herb that will go to the parts of the body that seem most affected, and prepare herbs for the person that will deal with each of those individual situations and get the tissue moving or calmed, as it were, as we need to. It's a beautiful thing about herbs. We can also use herbs that stimulate the uptake of nutrition. But again, one of the problems we've found ourselves in is the conditions surrounding malnutrition are so extreme, so unbelievably severe, that some of the herbs that have been used for thousands of years without a single casualty, without a single problem, no injuries, no deaths, no illness ever. Some of those herbs that have been used that long, that way, all of a sudden people are getting liver failure from them. And it's not the herb that's changed, right? The thing that's changed is we have people not only malnourished, but they're taking in these excitotoxic chemicals that don't exist in nature at all. They have to be man-made. They have to be isolated to get any kind of excitotoxic action. There are excitotoxins in plants, but they're balanced with other chemicals that exist naturally. You don't get an excitotoxic effect. Now, for those of you who don't know about excitotoxins or wonder about their legitimacy, let me just put it to you differently. These are toxins that are toxic, that do leave their residue in the body, but that are stimulating to the nervous system and typically the immune system. And so you get those systems jacked up, overactive, and at the same time, there's a toxic effect. So the toxins stay in the body, in fat cells or in the tissues or in the liver, and when you detox them, there's this excitotoxic effect. So we take herbs that we would use to heal someone, and they stimulate these to come out of the tissues. And all of a sudden, you have an excitotoxic effect. So now you can damage the person instead of healing them, doing exactly what should heal them. So the first step we all need to do immediately, if you're wanting to get well and you want to fix it right now, the first step you've got to do right now is get rid of the excitotoxic substances from your diet immediately. And do not negotiate with yourself on this matter. Just get rid of them all. All of our genetically modified organisms have an excitotoxic effect. I have a theory about that, but I don't know why, but I can observe it. It's obviously happening. So become anti-GMO, period. Do not consume them ever, period. All of our chemically isolated sugars, the corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup and white table sugar, right? These days, my wife and I were laughing about this a little bit 10 years ago. It's a crazy world we've entered into when white sugar is the healthy option, as opposed to high fructose corn syrup, which is the most extreme excitotoxin that I know of that's going to be in your food. Okay? Excitotoxins tend to be very stimulating, so they're also very addictive. And the reason you see high fructose corn syrup everywhere is it simply is more addictive. And you're not going to see any major company remove high fructose corn syrup without adding something else in its place that is also excitotoxic. Because that's how you get people hooked at the very first taste. Excitotoxins. That's your key. You can't give them methamphetamines, so you got to give them excitotoxins. That way you've got an addict. And these companies, generally speaking, these are not big, horrible companies. These are not people with their CEOs that are just against the world. The only thing the CEOs are interested in is being good business people. And so they're outsourcing their foods to one of three or four major food producers in the world that are capable of keeping up with a national chain or an international chain. And those corporations are going to have recipes that are available, that are recommended, that are basically going to be shipped to everybody in the world. And so they're going to send out a brochure when they figured out how to solve this problem, and because they read the writing on the wall, right? They know high fructose corn syrup, it's pretty soon you won't be able to sell anything to about a third of the population that have been buying this, are going to stop buying it. Because maybe it's 20%, a third I just pulled out of the air, but some large portion of the population that have been buying it are going to stop as long as that high fructose corn syrup is there. So we've got to get rid of it. So let's find something else. And they do. And it's not hard because chemical dyes fit that category. Have you ever looked at a chemical dye and go, why is that even there? It's there because it's excitotoxic. It has an addictive effect. All right. So this is a really common thing that's happening all the time. It's happening right now. If you're buying food from a national or international chain of restaurants, fast food establishments, packaged food producers, etc., if you're buying food from them, I promise you, you're getting excitotoxins, and the removal of high fructose corn syrup might make you feel better in your mind and emotions, but it's not going to be a solution, okay? Because they're not going to give that up. It's not going to go away. The only solution we've got going for us is to move steadily and decisively toward locally grown, 100% whole food. Buy your food from the produce section of the store. Stay out of the other sections unless there is something that you pretty well know is not going to be a big deal. Like you might be able to get stewed tomatoes with just calcium. It's not coming to me right now and I don't have it in front of me, but the... They use a lye to help with the canning of the stewed tomatoes. So you might be able to go get those, and all it is in there is lye. It's not going to hurt you, at least minimally or probably not at all. It's a naturally occurring substance. You might go there, but be careful because what we're finding is everything in a package now is contaminated. Contaminated with chemicals that maybe aren't excitotoxic, but they are toxic. They are harmful. They do tend to cause abnormal immune reactions, so they might be excitotoxic. And these are things that they're using just to guarantee the sterility of the packaging. They spray it inside the can or inside the bag. I haven't been able to confirm its presence in cans at all, but anything you buy in a Mylar bag is suspect. Chances are it's been sprayed was something that would kill anything living on the inside of that bag. And then there's no effort to clean that out because that is preserving the liability. That's preventing liability for the company manufacturing the bags for food products. So now it's sent out and the food producer wants to put something organic in there and does, but it's all contaminated.
To my knowledge, we don't have anybody even checking that. The only thing I'm finding is that certain things seem to have a high level of it. And I'll get the patient in there and they'll be sensitive to it when it's in a Mylar bag. But you take it and you not take it out of the Mylar bag, but if you buy it in a different form where it's never been in a Mylar bag or it's been in a Mylar bag, but it was a huge quantity, so the majority of it has not touched the wall of the Mylar bag, the person is not sensitive to it anymore. And so we're finding out that that is a method we can use to detect the fact that it's present, but we still don't really know how to nail it down, chase it down, find the problem. Because I don't know of a list anywhere that tells us, oh, these things are safe. Everything else is being packaged in this chemical-ridden environment that's creating all these problems. I didn't mean to go off on toxins. I got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to try to keep these to 30 minutes long. So let me just go back. We want to keep our bodies moving. The Qigong exercises are the best way to do that. And I tell you what, I don't have that training on my website. And the reason is the only time I do training on my website is if there isn't anybody really doing it adequately to my liking. Okay? And in this case, there is. So if you go to YMAA Publications on the App Store, you'll find an app for Qigong for arthritis. You'll also find an app that will teach you Tai Chi, or you maybe can find a local Tai Chi practitioner. But I'm less inclined to send you out to find a local Qigong practitioner because many forms of Qigong exist that I don't think are a good match for the needs of the modern world. Dr. Yang's Qigong systems that he teaches, I think, are an excellent match. The other thing, you can go on YouTube and see my daughter demonstrating Qi Lel, which I also think is an excellent match for the modern world. Needs to be done several times a day if you're really sick, but it's going to keep energy moving. So either of those are excellent options. But you're not really going to find them for training on my site because why should I? I can't do as good a job, really, as Dr. Yang can do from YMAA Publications, which is Yang Martial Arts Association, YMAA, Yang Martial Arts Association. He's going to do an excellent job, and you can buy the app for your smartphone and take it everywhere and open it up and watch a little bit of it and duplicate it. And the only thing he doesn't talk about that I'm going to talk about is when you're doing exercises for movement, you're going to prevent tension almost always. There are some situations where you tense up and release. That might be okay if the system for doing that is set up. You have the proper kind of system that's going to keep things moving. That might be all right. But Dr. Yang doesn't talk about that very much, and so I'm talking about it right now. It's a hugely important deal that we do not let our body bind up. The rule is never go more than 70% of tension. When you're moving, stretching, etc., go to 70% and then release. Don't try to go past and force it, because in doing so, you create energy blocks. One of the reasons martial artists get so beat up, they don't have to. They do simply because they are developing a lock before and a lock after all of these martial arts moves so that they can have this explosive strength. And it's very effective. But unfortunately, it sacrifices their life in the future, or at least their health, their well-being. What we want to do is learn a different way, which is why I'm a big fan of Tai Chi. I think if you want to get into martial arts, do Tai Chi. Maybe if you had the right teacher, Aikido would be okay. There are probably other martial arts that would be okay that I don't know about. I'm not a purveyor of martial arts information. But for sure, we want for our purposes, we're going to focus on things that will keep energy moving. Tai Chi does. And so does Qigong if it's done correctly. Just don't ever go to 100%. Yoga, same thing. Never go to 100%. Always stop at 70% of tension. You overachievers in yoga, I'm going to see you in my practice after you've hurt yourself. Okay, and you're going to get sick. It's going to make you sicker, not better. Now, when we come back on the next one, we'll talk More about energy movement and its relationship to proper diet. So we'll come back and do that then.